This is the Business Report with Gary Strubel on Nova 103.5.
Welcome to the Business Report. I'm David Bishop. Gary's away this week, so I'm taking over. In the lead story tonight, the continuation of the interview that we had with Namibia's Green Hydrogen Commissioner, James Nyupe. In the spotlight, we chat to Liberty Life Namibia MD Monique Kluter. And in the business wrap, I have a quick catch-up with Michael Apple. Angie also spoke to Weston Mhlanga, the Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Mines of Namibia. And Gary, on a trip to Ongwediva to visit the trade show, spoke to the Corporate Communications Officer for the Ongwediva Town Council, Jackson Muma. Cricket Namibia also announced a new sponsorship for the National Under-19 Ladies Team World Cup qualifier that's taking place in Botswana, where they're hoping to book a spot in the upcoming World Cup. Here's Cricket Namibia CEO Johan Muller with the sponsorship.
It's a sponsorship that INOVA has with our senior women's side and also with our under-19 girls side that specifically now is going off to the Africa qualifiers, where the winning team will be playing in the under-19 World Cup next year in January in South Africa. And we just really want to thank INOVA as an innovative company that's getting involved in female sport and specifically female cricket. They've got wonderful products and it's great that they're sending this team off in such a wonderful way and allowing them to go out and perform to the best of their ability. Mostly product orientated, so it helps the girls with additional nutrition, with rehabilitation, medicine to help their muscles recover, nutritional products to help them perform better on field. It's a really good advantage that especially in a long tournament where fatigue plays a part, to have excellent nutritional supplements is a critical factor.
That was Cricket Namibia CEO Johan Muller talking about the new sponsorship for the National Ladies Under-19 World Cup qualifier team. Right now, it's time for the Business Flash Briefing.
Rebuilding the economy starts now. RMB Namibia Corporate and Investment Banking, proud partner of BizNews.
With your BizNews this hour, I'm Charlize Maslengle. Namibia's domestic economy rebounded to a record growth of 2.7% in 2021 relative to a contraction of 8% reduced by the COVID-19 pandemic, national account figures released by the Namibia Statistics Agency show. Old Mutual is among 8 insurers being investigated by SA's Competition Commission for potentially colluding on various cover products. Old Mutual CEO Ian Williamson says his institution would not knowingly do anything to prejudice its customers. Williamson says the group is cooperating with the competition authorities. South African pharmaceutical company Aspen Pharmacare has announced a deal with the Serum Institute of India to manufacture and distribute 4 Aspen-branded vaccines in Africa. And chip designer Nvidia Corp said on Wednesday that U.S. officials told it to stop exporting 2 top computing chips for artificial intelligence work to China, a move that could cripple Chinese firms' ability to carry out advanced work like image recognition and hamper Nvidia's business in China. I'm Charlize Maslengle. Stay tuned for more updates.
A sudden storm shouldn't disrupt your long-term outlook. Access RMB's flexible short-term liquidity. Rebuilding our economy starts now. RMB Namibia, a division of First National Bank of Namibia Limited.
Gary Strubel on the Business Report.
The lead story is proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future. We're back with part 2 of our interview with Namibia's Green Hydrogen Commissioner, James Nyupe. If you missed part 1, visit nova.com.na to listen to the podcast. We're speaking about above pay grades, and we're talking a lot of technical things here and referring to studies, but I'd say perhaps the man or woman on the street, you know, they want to know how this affects me. And a lot of times that boils down to jobs. We've obviously got a massive unemployment problem. You know, how do all of these projects lead into job creation? When do we start seeing job creation? What is the potential there for, you know, speaking directly to the man and woman on the street?
Yeah, I think super, super cool question. There's the skills tree, a functional skill sets or roles that Hyphen have given us that I'd actually like to share with you guys. Mm-hmm. And you put that on your link to the interview well, right? And so what it'll show you is, across Hyphen, whom are they envisioning to hire? They'll have departments, mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, rotating equipment, engineering, so think wind turbines, chemical process engineering, operators logistics, systems engineering, safety, health, and environment, and then support services and back office. Yeah. And then for each of these departments, they actually have university qualifications needed, vocational qualification, and low-skilled workforce, right? And for us as government, why I want you to have this, put this on your website, is folks need to start preparing themselves for these jobs. And these jobs are not hyphen jobs only. You know, you will need this for many, many different green hydrogen projects in the world, in Namibia. So if I have a child today and he's sort of like, hey, what should I study? These are some options, right? Hey, what would I be able to do with this? Well, that in that industry. So sometimes just disseminating information is the first step. So this is what one of the things I'll give you. Second thing, look, hyphen is sort of saying, you know, 15,000 jobs when we get into construction, right? And we're looking to get into construction in 2025. But one of the things I do want to show you, and actually I'll share these photos with you as well, put them up on the website. You know, when I visited the Omaruru Omburu Power Station, right, 20 megawatts, I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. But I start meeting the guys who are building it, right? So this is David. He has on his helmet, like, breadwinner. You know, like, this is real, right? Yeah. And then you sort of see him teaching me, like, how he's, like, screwing the panels onto the racks. And these are all his colleagues, right? Like, these are all the other guys that he's working with to build a solar farm. These are real jobs today. So, like, green hydrogen sounds fancy, but a solar plant like this, there's another one that's going to be built in Swakopmund called Kind Power by the same company, Hopsol, for example. You know, Cleanergy, together with ONL, has a company that builds solar plants as well. They want to build a gigawatt solar. Those are not tomorrow's jobs. Those are not 2025 jobs. Those are jobs today. And, you know, folks like, ONL Next Century, those guys are building assets today in South Africa, here, and in Europe. So if you're a Namibian with these skill sets, absolutely. One of the things those companies will have to do is to start training and increasing their capacity in view of what's coming. So if I'm us today, I'm going to those guys and I'm like, hey, I have a scholarship application, or I have an acceptance letter and I'm looking for a scholarship from ONL Next Century. And if you send me to school for the next 2 or 3 years, by the time this project is alive, that's one more member of your workforce. You get?
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's sort of where we need to now start getting into. If you're a Namibian, you're unemployed, you're like, what's, because it's not about knowing the job, it's about getting the skills for you to be relevant. So and then the key thing for me is don't wait for 2025. I've shown you here some sort of solar jobs, but construction, right? They're going to need to construct roads. They're going to need to construct houses. If you're an engineer, I mean, oh my gosh. So the list goes on and on. And what we are doing actually on the website, the gh2namibia.com website, we will be launching a refreshed one. We actually have a tab called Green Jobs.
Okay.
And we're going to start posting there. And not just for hyphen, but any job that we are coming across in this sector, we're going to start posting there. We just did the scholarship drive. 1,150 applications, right? Like, way more than we can take. We're going to announce the results of that in September.
Okay.
Towards the end of September. Now, here's the thing for me. If you're a Namibian company that can partake in this industry, you need to start putting money into that scholarship fund, right? Because at the moment, it's the Germans have given us 5 million euros. So it's 85 million bucks of their money that we're now putting in a pot and skilling Namibians. Mm-hmm. But the guys who are really going to make money from the jobs are the Namibia Construction GTC. So one of the things I'll be trying to do is to actually create a national scholarship fund, use that money as a seed, and then go to Namibian companies and say, put 500,000, put $1 million, whatever. You know, you guys can even run the program yourselves. But the bigger that grows and the more people we prepare, the larger the local content that we can own off these, yeah, of these projects. And I think once we start fighting for each other like that, you know, I think it's a quiet winning formula. Yeah.
We're talking about skills and the skills trees. Some of those skills, like we say, are here. We do have engineers. We do have people who are skilled in construction. But a lot of these sort of jobs of the future skills don't currently exist in Namibia. Or if they do, they're very few and far between.
Correct.
You mentioned Germany and the scholarship fund. Who have been our biggest supporters when it comes to technology and expertise?
And when you say our biggest supporters, are you sort of meaning, you know, who is Germany? Obviously has been sort of the country that has come up with the cash, and not just the cash, but also the programs, right? So some of the programs being designed are being designed with German universities partnering up with Namibian universities, whether it's NAST or UNAM. But I can sort of see the US beginning to come up as well. We're beginning to talk to them a lot more. I would love to see Asia, right? Japan, we're beginning to talk to a lot as well. Even the Chinese actually have some really interesting expertise in building electrolyzers. You'd be amazed as well. So I'd love for Namibia to become a bit more global. The EU, the Dutch, the Belgians, they're all sort of, you know, we can collaborate with Delft University from the Netherlands. They actually are looking to build a pilot project here as well. So think global. What I would say if I was Namibians is do your research, go on the internet and see who is making the best electrolyzers at the moment, who is making the best either solar panels, who has the most patents for a lot of the equipment, right? When I started researching that, a lot of the patents actually reside in Europe and Japan. And then you sort of ask yourself, well, what can we do and learn with those guys? And in Namibia at the moment, we're trying to actually sign an MOU between JOGMEC, which is like the Japanese oil, petroleum, mining, and energy company. It's like a big state-owned, like think NAMCOR times 100, right? But you know, we want to sign an MOU with them to start collaborating on exploring synthetic fuels and rare earth metals as well.
Okay.
Because, you know, the rare earths or the critical raw minerals are a key part of the energy transition. So that's how we're thinking. But for now, you can't deny the Germans have really come through in a big way, and there's still a few programs we want to run with them.
Okay. Lastly, you mentioned sort of your studies and your reading, you know, speaking of learning, you come from more of an investment background. How much have you had to learn about green hydrogen and perhaps what's one of the most interesting facts that you've picked up along the way?
So folks who know what background I've come from would not be that surprised, because look, obviously the whole accounting thing, you know, I started off as an auditor at PwC. That's an interesting profession that forces you to learn about different industries anyway. You're auditing a trucking company, you're auditing a mine, you're auditing an IT company. And so in order to fully understand that company and make sure you're representing its activities on financial statements, you have to read a lot about, you know, I don't know, IT equipment, if you're talking to Business Connection, for example. And then after that, the next company I worked for and the next qualification I pursued was a chartered financial analyst and working for Allen Gray as an investment analyst. And in that company, you have to analyze those businesses in even more depth, right? And from all sorts of angles and the macroeconomic environment within which they operate, right? So at Allen Gray, we would spend easily 2-3 months to write one policy group report that was then debated with 21 people who were smarter than you. Yeah. And you had to tell these people why Sasol was a good investment, or why, you know, Dangote Sugar was a good investment, or why Econet Wireless was a bad investment, or why you would short the Namibian, you know, I don't know, 10-year bond. And so because of that background, I literally would have to know, and Allen Gray, we never had sector specialists. So I had to know from telecoms to, you know, Sasol, that was a big energy company, to Bidvest, which was a big conglomerate, to Namibia Breweries, you know, so. Because I analyzed all of those companies, and not just from understanding their business model, you then actually had to build a financial model that learns from the past 10 or 15 years and then actually forecasts 3 or 4 or 5 years ahead in terms of how this company could grow, and then value it by discounting those cash flows, put a price in it, and then, because of that, by the time I was studying green hydrogen, I had studied, I don't know, 20 other different companies in 20 different sectors. And then the one thing that people don't appreciate is, you know, so people said, but you're not like a traditional economist. As an investment analyst, you anyways had to study a whole bunch of ecos. But we had to model these companies' operating environments within a Naira environment, within a Kenya shilling environment, within a multi-country. So if you're looking at MTN, you wouldn't just model the rand.
Yeah.
You had to think of the naira. And so once you started doing that, you had to understand the economy, I think, backwards and forwards as well. So all of that helped me a lot. And then your last question, the most interesting fact I've learned about green hydrogen is possibly the fact that it's not about green hydrogen. You know, because it's not even the product we're going to sell. The product we're going to sell is ammonia to start off with, but it's molecules and electrons. And once I started seeing that, you know, it's molecules and electrons and the efficiency factors of converting the electricity into the molecules, and then realizing that that is actually not the most efficient thing to do. And that's what people always used to talk about. But converting this electron into a molecule, you lose like 30-40% of the energy. But it is the best alternative we have to decarbonizing some sectors. And so it's being done anyway. I think that was because in the beginning, everyone was like, oh, this thing's not going to last. Whereas you can't put a battery large enough on a ship. It would take up all of the space of the cargo. And when I made peace with that, and then I realized that there were people who were willing to pay a price for that, and they were being held by, oh my God, sorry, I say that on radio, but you know, the one thing that came out, was it last week? The Inflation Reduction Act. Viewers, go read up on that. The United States is willing to give a tax credit of up to $3 a kilogram. Now, remember, the long-term ambition for a lot of folks is to produce hydrogen at $2 a kilogram and below, right? Today, they're saying green hydrogen can be expensive at $6 to $8 a kilogram. Some places you can get a $5. The U.S. is giving you a tax credit on up to $3 a kilogram, potentially for the first 10 years. That's huge. And it's like a couple of $100 billion, right, that they're willing to put in there. And once you start putting those sort of tax credits and mechanisms into the models, you know, you're getting guys who are willing to deploy capital, I think, today. I think that's the other big interesting thing that I'm learning, is the German government, the U.S. government, is willing to put a lot of taxpayer money into these models because it is the best way to decarbonize their economies. And why are they doing that? Because young people are voting them out of power. Maybe that's the other interesting thing I've learned, is in Europe specifically, Greta Thunberg and her buddies have changed the German government. It's now being led by the Greens because of the young vote. And as a result, you know, you can see what's happening in them. Crazy, huh? From Greta Thunberg to Hage Geingob. But anyway.
Well, thank you so much. There's so much more to talk about, and I'm sure we will talk to you again in the future, but yep. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David, for having me, and yeah, looking forward to the next one. See you soon.
The Lead Story was proudly brought to you by Alex Forbes. Alex Forbes, let us help you secure your financial well-being now and in the future.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. Namibia's Business Leader on Nova 103.5.
In this week's Spotlight interview, we're speaking to Monique Kluter, the Managing Director of Liberty Life Namibia. Hello, Ms. Kluter.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And you?
I'm doing awesome, thanks.
So let's start right at the beginning. Where did you grow up and what led you to pursuing the career that you did?
So, David, I grew up, I was born in Cape Town, in the home that my folks still stay in. Hmm. Many, many years ago, I won't tell you how many. And essentially that's where I grew up. That's where I spent the bulk of my school. That's where I spent my schooling. And then went to UCT and I joined a corporate in Cape Town. And during that time, they were actually opening up an actuarial department in Windhoek, and they asked me if I would like to help them with that. And I said to them, yeah, I'll give you 6 months. And, 21 years later, I've not left.
Windhoek does that to people.
Yeah, somebody said to me after I'd been here for about a month, they said to me, if you've drank water out of the tap or you've worn through one pair of shoes, you'll never leave. So I said to them, well, you warned me a bit late.
So talking of that journey after university then, what kind of leadership roles have you held and how did you actually end up running one of Namibia's largest insurance and investment companies?
David, for me, it was, so the choices I made were, initially I wanted to be a doctor. Can I just get that out the way? And then I realized I actually can't deal with gore. So I chose something a little bit less gory. And I pursued investments and economics, not actually knowing what I wanted to do. And I think I found my passion as I went through my working career. I started working for a corporate dealing with employee benefits. And what happened is I actually realized that I enjoyed making a difference in somebody's life. The bulk of things we dealt with was retirement, death benefits, disability benefits, those kind of things. And I really got to experience the drive that comes with that when I did move to Windhoek, and I got to see customers face to face and really see the impact of what their life savings meant to them when they got to retirement. So that's really what sort of keeps me in the go. That's what keeps me in this industry, in fact. So I started off in that environment. I then left them and joined a stockbroking house in Namibia, and I did a bit of research on locally listed stocks. And then I realized, no, that's actually where my heart was. My heart was with people who were facing trauma in their lives. And so I went back and eventually started, left them again and started a sort of competitor business in the industry, which Liberty then bought in 2019. And that's how I ended up at Liberty.
Okay. Yeah. Mentioning that starting the business and building something up from scratch, how does that differ from the corporate world and what lessons did you learn from that?
David, if somebody asked me about strategy and all those things today, I'd probably give you pretty much a similar answer to what I would have done before I'd gone through that experience. But how I would execute it is very different. So I learned the value of a dollar very quickly when I was on my own. I learned that spend needed to bring some sort of reward. And also getting your hands dirty, putting your hands in the engine and ensuring that everything's running and really putting yourself into it. I suppose from a personal point of view, it was probably the time I grew the most, from a personal point of view. It was the largest learning curve for me. Corporate, I mean, you do pretty much the same thing, but it's a very different methodology and there's a bit of a safety net, I suppose, in corporate, where if you're on your own, you've got to do anything to make the till ring. You've got to do what's necessary and you have to do it yourself.
Mm.
Yeah.
You're running Liberty Life now. How did those lessons that you learned, how do you translate those into sort of the everyday running of a massive corporation?
So I think I'm still quite penny-wise, I suppose, is the word. I still apply a lot of those principles that I learned when I was alone, when you had to make everything count. And that really comes through. When we're doing anything as a business, it's about what is going to make this count. I think for me, what does help me now is that I really can focus. When you're on your own, you're focused on your customer, yes, and delivering what is quality to them. Because it's about a personal brand. For me, I think I've grown as an individual wanting to make a difference. That was sort of how I started out on my own. But I think the learning from that has been, or the effect has been, that I really focus on how am I going to make a difference to the customer? What is this going to mean to them? And that's brought it, I suppose, my entrepreneurial activities have brought that to the fore a lot more. I think the other thing is I'm open to trying anything. I will try anything once and see if it works. If it doesn't work, great. We've learned the lesson. If it does work, awesome. So I'm very flexible around trying new things.
I wanted to see how we could work it in, and I think you've given me the in there with making a difference. Liberty recently got involved with the Cancer Association and the Chica the Bear project.
Yes.
Was that a personal undertaking?
So a little bit of both. I sit on the Cancer Association as the treasurer. I've been there since about just before 2020, in fact. So probably around 2018, beginning of 2019, I joined the association. Mm-hmm. So there is obviously personal involvement for me, but as an organization, we are looking at particularly our focus is children. And this was something that sort of spoke to our heart as a business, is that we wanted to look after not just there's physical health, there's mental health, and then there's obviously financial health. And those three components have got to meet. So we said, well, why don't we get involved with something that talks to physical health? Chica is our patron. Mm-hmm. Chica the Bear is our patron who will talk to children about mental health and obviously financial health as well.
Okay. Before we get into, let's call it the philosophical side of Monique Kluter, each week we ask our guests to choose one of their favorite songs for us to share with the audience, rather. What song have you chosen for us and why?
David, one of my favorite songs at the moment is called Here I Am. It's by Marvin Sapp. The opening line of the song is, here I am, I'm still standing. And I suppose that just talks to the journey, because there've been, I suppose people look at you and they say, oh, this is Monique Kluter, and they see the end picture. They don't understand what the journey's been. And that's why that's one of my favorite songs.
We're going to talk about the journey just now.
Here I am, I'm still standing. Here I am, after all I've been through, I survived every toil, every stair. I'm alive, here I am. Oh, 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 yeah. There were times when I almost gave up and I cried. But Lord, it's too much else to die. He was there all the time. By His grace, He is keeping me alive. By His grace and mercy, I'm still standing, standing. I'm standing in the presence of the Almighty with power and a testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For
You're listening to the Business Report on Nova 103.5. In this week's Spotlight, we're talking to Liberty Life Namibia MD Monique Kluter. Ms. Kluter, getting away from the world of work a bit, what hobbies do you enjoy and what do you do in your free time?
David, the things I do are really to center myself. There's obviously, I'm sure you understand, it's high pressure. So there are times where I've got to just find me. Mm. And in that, it's music. I'm actually quite arty. I surprise myself. So it's really sort of arty type of things. I'll take the time to draw. I listen to some good music that generally centers me. I've recently taken up a bit of golf. It's all right.
Is that rewarding or frustrating?
I think I feel better about myself because I need to walk on the golf course. Okay. So that helps. And then, yeah, so spending time with my family is actually quite rewarding. During the week, it's quite tough. I've got two young kids. So I sort of deliberately switch off on a Friday evening and refuse to look at anything work related, so that I can spend that time with them.
I actually saw this morning, with the leadership race in the UK and Rishi Sunak, obviously it's a man versus a woman. Rishi Sunak said that recently he's been a very bad father, and a lot of people said, imagine if Liz Truss had said that, you know, the men can get an applause for putting in extra time at work. Women obviously have unique challenges, and we've spoken to a few of the growing number of female leaders in Namibia about those challenges. How do you deal with being a female leader in what is still, to most extents, a male-dominated industry?
It is tough. I find that, but personally, for me, it's hard to let go of the task. I've got a task at hand, and that is running this organization and ensuring that we service our customers to the best of our abilities and living our purpose as a business, which is impacting lives, making financial freedom possible. So everything we do has got to be surrounded by that. So the task is front and center in my mind. During the week, it's hard with family and so forth. I find myself wanting to stay at the office because there's a task that needs to be completed. But then having to say, look, you know what? You've put in the slog. Let's change the pace. I think it's easier when you have, sort of a traditional family role, because you've got dad going out, he's going to the office, mom's often at home. That's how I grew up, right? Dad said to my mom, my job is to look after you and the family, and your job is to look after the kids. So that was, you know, what I lived as a child. So it's very different. I do have massive support from my husband, which is great. That really does help. He's got a bit more free time than I do. So he helps out a heck of a lot there. I think men do have it a bit easier. I've heard from male colleagues of mine before. They said to me, you know what? If you were a man, you'd have achieved a lot more. And I think that's very true. Because as much as there's a push to inclusivity and diversity, I think we're doing it because, you know, we've got to meet a mandate. Whether we actually see the value that is different in bringing a woman into an organization than a man, I'm not sure if that is the case.
Okay. Stepping away from male or female, though, for a minute, what would you say are the three most important qualities of any excellent leader?
David, the first one for me is selflessness. It's not about me. I have an organization to lead. I've got customers. This business is about the customer. I've got people within the organization who want to grow and want to achieve great things in life as well. I cannot make this about me. It's got to be about the people that work in the organization, the customers who come in and buy our product, their families who are eventually going to benefit from this product. So I think selflessness is a key piece. The second one for me is empathy. I've got to understand what my people are going through, what my customers are going through, and not just in my environment, but in any role. At the end of the day, if you're in business, it's about a customer. You're in radio, right? It's about the listener and what you're doing to please the listener. Because tomorrow they're not going to tune in if you haven't pleased them today.
Please tune in.
Please tune in for David. So that's exactly what it's about. It's about the end person who is using – that's why we exist. Mm. So we've got to understand who they are. And I think it's about – I think resilience as well. And that's quite a – it's quite a tough one because very often – resilience is seen as stubbornness.
Mm.
Quite often, it's misinterpreted that way. But I think resilience is the other piece. It's that never give up, sort of keep going. And regardless of how I feel, I've got to make sure that my people and my customers see the light at the end of the tunnel, even though it may be dark today.
Mm.
I've got to show them there's something more than this.
Talking about that resilience and how it can be seen as stubbornness, and just to get back to female leaders, do you think that it's seen as stubbornness more frequently in women than in men?
Did you climb into my brain and pick that piece up? I think very definitely. I think very definitely. As soon as you are assertive as a woman, it's seen as aggression.
Mm.
If you're assertive as a man, you know,
you're
he's a good leader.
Yeah.
But when you're assertive as a woman, very often it can be seen as aggression. Mm. Yeah.
Listening to your sort of keys for leadership, though, picked up, well, to me it sounds a lot like servant leadership. Would you say that that's the style that you choose to practice?
Yeah, very definitely. I'm here to help other people achieve their dreams as well. As much as, yes, my team will support me, I'm here to open up doors for them so that they can do what they need to do, be it in their studies, be it in their career paths. I need to open up a doorway for them, and that's really what it's about for me.
Do you think that ties into your personality and perhaps your upbringing?
My folks are both acts of service people. So very definitely at home, we never, you know, it was never, oh, I love you, Monique, or, you know, all the soft and you know, squishy things. But everything was done. Everything was done on time. The house ran like clockwork. So my parents very much acts of service people. For me, it's the same. I'm very similar. I will demonstrate how I feel about someone based on what I can do for them. And so I think that links very definitely with my leadership style.
Mm. Finally, let's look to the future a bit then. Do you have one of the much touted 5-year plans? What's next and where do you see yourself going on life's journey?
That's a tough one. I'm quite ambitious, so I'm always looking for what's the next step.
Mm.
Not necessarily up a ladder, but in terms of what is there to learn.
Mm.
And that's what intrigued me about Liberty as well. I'd never been on the inside of an insurer. I'd been looking at an insurer from a broker's point of view. So for me, and that's why I enjoy corporate, because it gives me the opportunity to try different things within an organization. So I can't tell you what that step is. There will be a step. I can't even tell you the timeline of that step. Very, very definitely, I think the next move will be more family oriented than me pushing a career. Yeah, but I can't give you a timeline, David. It's a bit tough to do that.
Well, whatever the timeline is, all the best for it, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David. Thanks for having me.
The Business Report. Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
The BizNews Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology and comfort. Book your test drive today at MNZ Motors. MNZ Motors is proud to introduce the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Contact MNZ Jeep and Fiat Group today for your test drive. Or visit the MNZ Jeep and Fiat Group Facebook page and check out their great offers. Jeep, go anywhere, do anything.
In today's BizNews Wrap, we're speaking to Michael Apple. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to Dr. Frans Cronier, and he expressed quite a bit of optimism about South Africa. But that's not the picture painted by one of the stories BizNews is carrying. Michael, tell us a bit about why so many registered voters believe that things are set to get much worse.
Yeah, that was a great interview that BizNews founder Alec Hogg did with Dr. Franz Grenier. He, of course, is the former chief executive of the Institute of Race Relations. He's moved on and now has an outfit called the Social Research Foundation, the SRF. South Africans would have seen over the weekend that there was a lot of coverage about the SRF's report that the ANC could maintain a majority or at least scrape by fingernail to that 50% mark in the 2024 national elections. And that's based on a poll that the SRF did with 3,204 randomly selected but demographically and regionally representative registered voters. And that's important, Dave, because you can do a poll, you can speak to South Africans, but if they're not registered voters, how much weight can you place on that poll? So there have been other polls that have put the ANC at much lower in the 30s, some in the 40s. This is the first poll to come out that has put them pretty much close to that 50% mark, if not bang on. And if they're a little bit under, the SRF is saying that this is obviously time for coalitions. And who is the natural bedfellow for the ANC? There's a lot of controversy around that, whether it's going to be the DA, whether potentially the DA would say, okay, we're going to come in, we're going to have a moderate centrist government, or is the EFF, if you look at reports that Julius Malema has indicated that the Red Berets are definitely not taking it off the table in 2024. So you could see an ANC-EFF coalition in 2024. But the article that we focused on yesterday comes from the Daily Friend. It's written by Jonathan Katzenillenbogen, and he's written about the electorate fear and loss of hope. And he jumped on this word, gatvol. So I thought that would be a nice summation of how South Africans are feeling in general. And the SRF research that he picked up on here, and it's quite a broad spectrum that this poll looks at, and it's particularly the question they were asked is, how do you see the next decade going, the next 10 years? And so it's no more detailed than that. And based on that, 46% of registered voters said things are going to get much worse in the country. And very interestingly, topping that particular poll were people who identified as EFF voters, 80% of them desperately despondent about how they see the next decade going, followed by 48% of ANC voters, and then the DA and Action SA in at 42% and 25%. So, yeah, a lot of despondency in South Africa. And as Katzenillenbogen says, fear and loss of hope so about what the 2024 national elections could hold for the country.
Well, I think, I mean, our government's selling a pretty good story in terms of oil discoveries and green hydrogen. But I think that that fear of the next 10 years of things getting worse is definitely something that we also have here in Namibia. Another story that you guys have on your site that got me thinking about the parallels with our country, though, is about the failure of your national rail company to live up to its mandate. Can you tell us a bit more about the story and what the implications are for South Africa and for South Africans?
Yeah, Transnet was the major site of state capture in the country. The Guptas and their ilk managed to spirit billions, over 54 billion is no, I'm not going to lie to you, billions. Was spirited out and went directly to the Guptas and their associates. So Transnet is considered the prime sort of ground zero for state capture. It's the state-owned entity in which they managed to get the most out of South Africa. And then they fixed their eyes on other places like Eskom and the SABC and so on. But Transnet has been a shambles for a long time. And if one looks at their recent financials that came out, they are reporting a 5 billion rand profit compared to an 8 billion rand loss the year before that. But I spoke to the Africa Rail Industry Association CEO, and she said, look, this was an accounting readjustment of what's on their books, and that puts them into the positive on paper. This is not money in their pocket. So it's fancy accounting, basically, while the reality on the ground is that commodities, agricultural products cannot get to port, cannot get to market because of our failing and ailing rail infrastructure. So it was actually Patrick O'Leary from Fleetwatch who very kindly gave me permission to run a story that he's put up on his site called Side Tippers Being Seen as the Villains of the Road. And I mean, if anybody has done a trip in South Africa on our national road network, you are competing with giant trucks all the time. And Patrick was explaining very detailed explanation in his report, just the consequences of having an economy that basically runs on trucks. It doesn't run on rail, where rail in any other country in the world is seen as the economic lifeblood. It's cheaper and it's more expensive to install, but it's cheaper to run once it's there. And South Africa has the rail network, or at least had, but has been carried off piece by piece, vandalism, theft, general corruption. But these trucks that are on South Africa's roads are becoming a bit of have been for some time a real problem. And you have companies like ArcelorMittal who have said, look, we are getting 6,500 trucks a month that are coming to Funderbijl Park when, quote unquote, it should not be receiving material by road at all. That's according to Kobus Verstappen, the chief executive there. He also said that they'd lost 650 million rand in lost sales in the first half of 2022 because of our failing rail network. So Transnet continues to be a massive problem, and South Africa's road fatality statistics are horrendous. And these trucks are really not doing us any favors, Dev.
I think definitely a lot of parallels we can draw here as well when it comes to trucks and to the sort of ailing and failing rail network. But for the stories that we spoke about today, as well as loads more content updated daily, you can, of course, visit biznews.co.za. Thank you so much, Michael. Great chatting to you.
Thanks, Dev.
The BizNews Wrap is driven by the new Jeep Grand Cherokee 3.6L Limited. Experience the sophisticated side of adventure with premium features including interior, technology, and comfort. Book your test drive today at M&Z Motors.
Gary Struble on the Business Report.
The Chamber of Mines of Namibia held the first physical mining expo since the COVID-19 pandemic. And Angie Skoltz from the news team popped down to have a chat with Weston Plango, the chief executive officer.
After 2 years, we finally have a face-to-face mining expo. What can we expect, sir?
Yeah, indeed. We are back. And I can tell you, as you can see around here, we are indeed back with a bang. The response from the public and from the exhibitors has been overwhelming. The event is actually oversubscribed. Just to put a bit of context to that, this year we've got 103 exhibitors in this venue. They have taken 163 stands. As compared to the last time we were here, and that was 2019, we had 88 exhibitors and they took 136 stands or booths. So you can see the incremental. Yes, indeed, in the last 2 years with the pandemic, we couldn't hold this event. But I must say, everything is falling into place, more especially that we are seeing the prices of our minerals on international markets are improving. In fact, they are rebounding very strongly. With that, we are seeing the growth of the industry going only one direction, and that is north. And that is both for mining as well as exploration. And that's why our theme being around the resurgence, we are back. And indeed, we are back in a strong way.
Yes, but even looking at the turnout of visitors, it's huge.
Yeah, it is. Indeed, it is. And obviously, because our objectives of the whole event is really threefold, and it has stayed like that over the years, is that we are here to showcase the industry so that we are able to explain to every person who wishes to engage us, members of the public, to explain what the industry is all about, and most importantly, how can they participate in the industry. I mean, this is capital intensive. So we always talk of, you know, big figures, big money, big capital intensive and all that. Obviously, and this is a national resource. It belongs to the citizens. So people, naturally, they are curious, how do we participate? It's our national asset. And that's why our job is to really come and explain what are the opportunities. That's one. And then secondly, or rather thirdly, the kids, we've seen lots of young fellows actually coming from, especially grade 11s, 10, 11, 12. Yes. That's the start, you know, at a stage where kids are wondering, what is it that they're going to do in their lives? So we are here to promote careers in mining, and how can we assist them, even with bursaries, and also most important, if they study a certain field, what is the career progression in that? So that's very important. Then maybe the last one, and which is even a bigger one actually, in addition to showcasing the industry, is to try to explain to our Namibian entrepreneurs in terms of what are the business opportunities in terms of procurement. We believe at the chamber that in the field of procurement of goods and services to the industry, that's where the billions lie. That's low-hanging fruit. As you know, mining is capital intensive. So it's very difficult to acquire a certain percentage of shareholding, for instance, which is what everybody desires. Yes, so why not? But because it has got to be acquired on a commercial basis, you find that it's, and it's capital intensive, so you find that the entry barrier is very high. On the other hand, we've been promoting at the chamber that why don't we look at the procurement where billions are on the table right now, and then when entities have made the millions, then they can basically be able to afford to acquire interest in the various mines. So that's a good strategy. And I'll give you a context of that. Last year, we produced about, from the sale of all minerals, about 32.5 billion Namibian dollars somewhere there, that region, just under 33 billion. And out of that, 15 billion, we spent it locally. Sure. In the Namibian economy. On the suppliers, local suppliers of goods and services. That money goes around circulating in the local economy. And we are saying, come and participate in that, because that is where we can even assist you. At least we've got the means or ideas of who could assist you setting up a business and mentoring that. But what is important is that ourselves, as the industry, we are the consumers of those mining inputs, services and goods. So we're encouraging that. And moreover, we believe that if we can have actually Namibian entities that can go into the manufacturing of such inputs, then at that time we're talking. Because you are not talking of industrialization.
Yes.
Because you are talking of now local factories that can supply, manufacture certain input, not just, you know, importing and, you know, mark up and selling to us, but you are actually manufacturing that input or that product which we consume in the mining business. At that point, you are employing Namibians. You are helping to grow the economy. And we as a mining, that's what we consider it to be, the upstream activities of mining. And we are, and the purpose of our being here as a mining expo is to discuss areas like that and to try to see business opportunities and help individuals to identify those business opportunities.
Yes. Yeah. And then looking at the different topics at the conference, we can't say one is more important than the other, but what would the focus be?
The focus is around, obviously, around our theme, that's the resurgence of our industry. So we are showcasing and showing to the public that indeed the industry has come out even stronger than before, coming out from the pandemic. We've got so many projects that are actually on the verge of becoming mines. And that is now the uranium mines, as well as two uranium exploration projects, very advanced. They are here on the floor. Those are on their way to becoming mines once certain things are in place.
Yes.
And some of the threats are out of the way. We've got one project which is going to become a third gold mine in Namibia, and that's Osino Resources. They are on the floor here. Right now, you know, I think the mining application has been submitted. And really, you find find that there's lots of topics that are equally really important. The chamber is very much in the discussion, participating in the discussion around the green hydrogen. We've got one particular presentation to showcase how green hydrogen can actually be utilized in the mining sector, so that we are not talking of just green hydrogen for export, but that green hydrogen can actually play a role in the local economy by integrating that with the other, you know, sectors of the economy, which then will optimize, you know, the benefits coming out of this new sector to the Namibian economy. So really, all the topics we have there, 12 of them, are very interesting.
Just the last question. If we look at mining in the future, what do you think the future of mining in Namibia would look like if we look at mining going forward?
Yeah.
Do you expect any discoveries being made more? What is your feeling? Please tell us.
Yeah, no, thank you. That's I love it. Brilliant question. I think maybe to sum it up, before I go into the detail, is I want to assure the nation through you that mining is the sunrise industry. Mining has got a future and a long future. Mining is not a sunset industry. And why am I saying that? Right now here on the floor, we've got so many projects which are new discovery. I mean, we are even into areas of battery minerals, areas of energy minerals, areas of battery minerals such as lithium. I mean, who is tin mine? There's a huge deposit that have been discovered, lithium. We've got so many minerals and so many deposits that have been discovered, again, because we're seeing so much investment into exploration.
Yeah.
For us, exploration is what gives us the sustainability of mining. Exploration is what creates what I call a pipeline of future mines, of future mines. So when I see more investments coming into exploration, I get very excited. And I'll tell you what. In 2020, we reported that some total of all investments in exploration, they amounted to about 520 million Namibian dollars. This is for both mining companies, because they also do exploration on the side, as well as the exploration companies themselves.
Yeah.
So that came to about, you know, 520 million. Last year, that figure jumped to over 800 million, so going close to a billion. Now, that is exciting. That shows that Namibia is an attractive investment for exploration, and that shows that we shall indeed continue to make mineral discoveries, and that shows that indeed in the pipeline of future mines, we are indeed adding more and more, and that way this is how we sustain the industry. And with that, this is how we believe that the issue should be for government to start to plan and say, you know, how are we going to utilize these resources or even optimize? And that's why from the government side and working with ourselves, the emphasis on now further value addition of the minerals that we are producing, and emphasis is on that. So really, another maybe last point to illustrate this point is a case of diamonds. Now, the future of, as you know, we are big in diamonds. The future of the diamond mining industry in Namibia is out in the sea. This year, that Ab Marine inaugurated the latest, you know, investment, and that's now the Benguela Gem. That's a diamond mining recovery vessel. That diamond mining vessel is the largest in the world. There's no such vessel anywhere in the world. So as Namibia, we should be proud of ourselves that we are pioneering in technology. That vessel, it was manufactured and designed and equipped with all the plants on board and everything at a cost of 7 billion Namibian dollars. It's now operating. It's in the seas right now. And that vessel alone has got the capacity of producing up to 500,000 carats of diamonds per year. And it will be doing so for the next 30 years. That is an investment for the future. And the last word again is looking at the future, since that's your question. I think the chamber, we are so pleased that government has actually made certain moves towards that, in the sense that we shared and we propagated as well the idea of government establishing a sovereign wealth fund, because then from the revenues coming from the extractive industry, this means that including oil and gas, if a certain portion of that is put aside for future generation, which is what our government has just done, that is something which is very commendable. So now we as Namibians, we should be proud that we've got a sovereign wealth fund. And at the chamber, we are proud that the extractive industry, part of those revenues coming from the extractive industry, will be utilized to invest for the future generation.
Thank you so much, sir. It was lovely talking to you.
Absolutely.
The Business Report. Podcasts on nova.com.na. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Nova 1035.
My guest this evening is Jackson Mumma, the Corporate Communications Officer from the Ongwediva Town Council and a member of the marketing team who puts together the Ongwediva Trade Fair. Jackson, welcome to the Business Report.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So we've wandered around. We've taken in some of the sights and sounds. The official opening was over the weekend. Tell us, has the show met your expectations? You guys weren't able to do it for a number of years due to COVID, and there were some considerations this year as well. So perhaps let's start with that. On how short notice was this year's trade fair put together when the restrictions were lifted?
In fact, we planned last year, that is 2020. We started planning over possibilities of COVID getting better, some restrictions being moved, but we were not very sure what's going to happen. That's why we plan to say, we need to decongest the halls. If the halls accommodate 134 people, for instance, in the Queen Hall, we decongest to 75. That's why you are seeing 75 exhibitors today in the Queen Hall. It's because of the planning on that basis. Now, we also looked at a number of activities, including the entertainment. That's why we will only have entertainment from the 26th. 27, and then the last 2 days. It's because we said let's not have too many people coming in and out because of that fact as well. And you look at many other factors here. You can see the show has been affected by the planning of that time, but nevertheless the event kicked off 26 August and it started very well on a good note. Although we have encountered some hiccups here and there in terms of our e-ticket, but that is sorted out. However, the business fraternity that is participating in the trade fair this year, people are really doing business and they are happy to be here. For the community out there, that is community of Ongwediva, Oshana region, Namibia, people that are looking forward, have been looking forward to this event. And that excitement, it's visible. Visible in the street, it's visible wherever, whenever you get a call from Swakop, the coast, or coming from Katima. People are really thirsty to see Ongwediva and your trade fair king again.
That's a very impressive setup. The grounds, the halls, beautifully done up and very well maintained. Of course, I can also mention our sister station, Omalunga, now has its new permanent studio up in the north at the trade fair grounds as well, and that's in fact where we're talking to each other right now. What is the purpose of the trade fair from the town council's perspective?
Yeah, the trade fair started in 2000. Remember, it started just like these other upcoming trade fairs. But the good part with the trade fair, it started with a few infrastructures here and there. Phase one. When phase one was done, then the trade fair starts. Now, the aim at the time, from 2000 to 2005, that we had a theme exposing Ongwediva business-wise. The aim was to expose the town, which was then known as a residential area, into a town where people can work, obviously with institution set up, where you have businesses, people can do shopping, people can go to school and all that. Now, the aim is to to expose the town. And from 2006 to date, the themes have started being developed by the committee, looking at the trends of the time. Now, that aim has also shaped the nature and character of the trade fair, because we are looking at business promotion, business and trade promotion, as well as networking. That's why we have a conference hall here where institution and business community come, network, share information with the clients, and also in the end, network with other business communities, thereby, developing new concept in the market and also improving their business activities. So the aim is actually trade promotion and networking. That is the basic one, and that is evident in what we are doing here. If you look at the entertainment, it only constitutes 3% of the trade fair. It's not our focus. And also, if you look at the kiddies' entertainment there, merely makes just maybe 1% or something. It's not our focus. The focus is actually on business. But obviously, you need to have fun while you are doing business, so that at least, people are social being. They need to look here and there. That's why you also have Katutura, or what we call Katutura, but the official name is the entertainment kiosk, where they can have their kapana there, they can have their traditional chickens and all the legacies that you find here, and also something small, cold beer, that part. Yeah, basically the purpose is trade promotion and business networking.
So, what impact has the trade fair had on the development of a town? And I perhaps want to praise that by saying it's a very interesting dynamic with Oshakati just a few minutes up the road, Ndungwa just a few minutes down the road. There's obviously a lot of competition for resources, a lot of competition for business placement, and each of the towns wants to develop its town as best it can. What impact has the trade fair had on Ongwediva as a town?
Yeah, obviously the town of Ongwediva started as a settlement where residential was more predominant. But then the council at the time looked at how best we can expose the town to the investors out there. And now, looking at Ongwediva, the oldest town in the region, in Oshakati, known as the commercial center of the north, it was quite systematic by the Ongwediva town council at the time, because that was now the main, in terms of governance, overseer of what is happening at the trade fair. Now, with the emerging trade fair, now the people have started realizing the potential that the town has to bring or has to offer, and that's why in August, if you come here, you will find that any hotel or guest house or bed and breakfast is full. That's where now the development started, with the tourism industry being established, well established in fact for that matter, and that is when we have seen that the need also has arisen for people to do shopping, to get their kids to school, and then you have seen 2004, the Medipark came, and to cater for health need of the people. That's why you have seen after 2010 there you have seen Oshana Mall, Marua Mall, and recently Chico Mall and other malls now emerged coming here in town. You have also seen the construction of the Jose Eduardo Santos, that is UNAM Engineering Campus, also came into the picture, and many other private schools also came in. So now you have your UNAM is here with two campuses, then you have your NAST is here, then you have IUM, and they are developing further. And a lot of private schools. As we speak now, we have 23 schools, including now private and public schools. And it's not just schools. There are schools that are really of, a good note, that way you would want to take your kids and get a quality education. So then we look at the housing. You have a popular Extension 11 here, where properties, of good quality, modern nature are seen, and many others. So the town has grown gradually just because people have seen potential in it, stemming from the Ongwediva annual trade fair. That we cannot divorce from it.
Okay. And I mean, towns that are able to retain their citizens, one of the challenges of the north is to not let all the young people go down to Windhoek for work. They can work close and their facilities are close. They also start investing, and of course property prices and values start going up, and people start building generational wealth, which is one of the core challenges of Africa, is to be able to develop this generational wealth. So the trade fair, if I'm hearing you correctly, plays an enormously powerful flywheel role in getting this ball rolling for the long-term development of Ongwediva, and in fact the entire area, as it raises the standards of living for all its citizens.
Definitely so. And what we have seen is that we're able to retain professionals of note. You have your lawyers, doctors, and many other professionals.
Radio DJs.
Radio DJs, and we also, you know, you remember Mlunga was here before, he was in the north before, somewhere stationed in Oshakati, but I'm happy that now we managed to have Mlunga Radio here in the north, and many other essential services being stationed in Ongwediva. And that's one thing that tells you that the town, because a young professional or whatever the case might be, would want kids to go to a better school. So you take your kid here. If you want your kid to go to institution of high learning, universities are here. And if you want to go to get a better health facility, you go to, there's a private hospital. And that builds confidence to the citizens, to the residents, so that at least you can live here, do shopping here, work here in Ongwediva, and you know all the social needs are catered in town. So you don't have to go somewhere, fly elsewhere to do shopping. You just go; all the shops are here.
Well, Jackson, the festivities are all around us for the next couple of days. Still, congratulations to you and the town council for reinstituting the trade fair. I know that you were anxious to get it going, and then here it is. Guys are having a great time. The crowds are here. The corporates are all here as well. And I think I speak on behalf of many Namibians to say it's wonderful. It's always a privilege to come up to Ongwediva and be part of the trade fair. So congratulations and all the best for what remains.
That's in order. And what I can share with you lastly here is that there's a hive of activities taking place in Ongwediva Annual Trade Fair, including business networking. And we are also talking of agriculture. The 29th, that is when we have information from Namibian Meat Board. And on the 30th, we have the auction of small livestock, pending that we have those large scale animals like cattle. We are talking cattle, then others cannot move for now because of the lung disease, but we are using the auction shall be for small livestock only, not the big ones. So a lot is happening here, and we are expecting that the community participate in this trade fair. But besides that, we are also looking at the virtual trade fair, whereby you just log to oatf.vfairs.com, and that is where you find a corporate institution showcasing their products and services there. So once you register as an attendee, you'll be able to go there. It's for free. You don't have to pay. And this is a concept that we are developing, and that is connected to our theme, Gearing for a Smart Economy, denoting that we need to do business differently, virtually for that matter, because COVID has presented and in fact exposed so many opportunities to us so that we can do things differently. On that note, thank you very much for having me, and it's a pleasure speaking to you.
It's a pleasure being up here in Ongwediva, and if you can't get here, get along to the website. You can take part in the virtual trade fair as well. Not quite as much fun, but you'll get all the information you need. That's Jackson Muma, the Corporate Communications Manager for the Ongwediva Town Council, and also a member of the organizing committee of the Ongwediva Trade Fair.
It's the Business Report with Gary Struble. The Business Report. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Novo 1035.
I'm David Bishop with your weekly economics wrap. Speaking at the 21st edition of the Ondangwa Annual Trade Fair, President Hage Geingob said the government has prioritized agriculture, health, finance, defense, and education to increase production, create new jobs, and ensure food security through technological transformation as it gears towards positioning itself to adopt the fourth industrial revolution. Minister of Industrialization and Trade Lucia Ipumbu says the Oshana region can become a commercial hub pending investor interest. The Ministry of Mines and Energy has placed an indefinite moratorium on applications for new fuel retail sites or wholesale licenses. The United Nations Development Programme, in collaboration with the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, held a seminar on the promotion of carbon markets in Namibia, and City of Windhoek spokesperson Lydia Amutenya says they are working on new policy frameworks which will result in the capital city erecting mixed-use developments and increasing informal trading spaces.
The city is actually engaging or considering some much needed changes to the current planning policy. The policy is required so that we are able to properly guide the public also guide ourselves in the process of approving some of these requests from the public for different land use policies. Land use planning is a process by which the land use is allowed between competing and sometimes conflicting use in a balanced manner in order to secure the rotational and orderly development of land. This practice is actually aimed at avoiding chaos by creating sustainable human settlement in an environmentally friendly, sound manner.
In other local news, Old Mutual Short-Term Insurance Company Namibia has entered into two settlement agreements with the Namibia Competition Commission and agreed to pay $6 million after the insurer was found of having contravened the Competition Act in two separate investigations. While their parent company in South Africa is among eight insurers being investigated by the Competition Commission for potentially colluding on various cover products. While in some good news, the domestic economy recorded positive growth of 2.7% in 2021 compared to a contraction of 8% registered in 2020. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa appointed nine people to form an anti-corruption advisory council to help in the fight against corruption. While the presidency was given 72 hours in which to assess and address the concerns of unemployed social workers, scores of whom marched to the union buildings demanding jobs and a 7,000 rand monthly stipend. And staying in the country, the government is forging ahead with a plan to create a new state-owned power company by converting three coal-fired plants into gas-burning generators to ease the nation's energy crisis. In news from the rest of the continent, the state-owned Botswana Power Corporation has awarded Norwegian company Scatec ASA a contract to build a 50-megawatt solar plant as the country looks to boost power supplies and increase clean energy shares. And the first shipment of grain from Ukraine to Africa since the war began docked at the Red Sea port of Djibouti. Looking further afield, British leadership frontrunner Liz Truss is considering cutting value-added tax by 5% across the board to help tackle the cost of living crisis if she succeeds Boris Johnson as Prime Minister next month. After almost 2 years of COVID-19 restrictions that have barred foreigners from entering the country, Japan is hoping to boost the number of international students in a move it hopes will make the Japanese education system more competitive. Belgium's energy minister has warned that EU countries will face 5 to 10 terrible winters if nothing is done to reduce natural gas prices. OPEC has floated a possible production cut, which could see oil prices reach $150 a barrel, and Indian billionaire Gautam Adani, who runs one of India's top conglomerates, is now the world's third richest person, becoming the first Asian person to take that spot.
Namibia's business leader on Nova 103.5.
Thank you for having joined me on this Spring Day edition of the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Of course, this evening we spoke to James Nyupe about some more of Namibia's hydrogen ambitions, found out more about Monique Kluter, the MD of Liberty Life, and her journey to get where she is today. We spoke to Michael Apple from BizNews and the BizNews Wrap. Angie caught up with Vestan Malango, the Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Mines of Namibia, and that interview that Gary held when he was up in Ongwadiba for the trade fair with Jackson Muma, the Corporate Communications Officer for the Ongwadiba Town Council. Remember to tune in again next week, and if you missed anything, you can catch it all on our website, nova.com.na. Get in touch with us, tbr@nova.com.na. Follow us on Twitter, @tbr on Nova 103.5. Visit the website for all the podcasts, or catch us on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting service.
That was the Business Report on Nova 103.5. Listen to all the segments and previous episodes with our podcast service on nova.com.na. The Business Report was presented by Gary Struble and produced by Angie Skulls and David Bishop. Comments and questions can be sent to tbr@nova.com.na.